I'm Paolo Salvatori. Some of you already knows me, okay? You know, here in Microsoft, we care high availability. As you can see, I have not one Microsoft, one microphone. I have two microphones, okay? And they are configured in log shipping, anyway. And I'm Paolo Salvatori. I'm the European member of the formerly known Bisto Customer Advisory Team, and now it's called AppFabric Customer Advisory Team, just because we wanted to emphasize the fact that now we are focused on all middleware technologies, as my manager Kurt said in his previous presentation. So, as you know, my objective, my purpose, my mission is to make sure our enterprise level customers succeed with Bistock, and from now on with all our middleware technologies. So in the past, I had the chance to make a lot of architecture and design review and performance labs, and I had the opportunity to work with some of you. So you want to introduce yourself? Everyone knows you, but you know. Okay, we can proceed. So this is the agenda for the speech today. So we'll see in the first part of the presentation the new settings dashboard that allows you to easily tune your Bistock environment. We'll see also how you can replicate the settings that you define on your, for example, staging environment on a production environment very easily. Then we'll continue. We'll talk briefly about the System Center Operation Manager and the new management pack, what are the enhancements and the optimization that have been made. And then Michael will talk about things like optimizations and extension that were made to the SQL part of Bistock, like, for example, the SQL backup compression, data transparent data encryption. These new features provided by SQL, and Bistock now is able to get advantage of these new features. And at the end, we'll talk about what you need to migrate to Bistock Server 2010 if you have if your actual environment is running on Bistock Server 2006 or 2009. And we'll also introduce at the end, very briefly, what are the other new features provided by Bistock Server 2010. Okay, so the first slide is to emphasize the many steps that the application lifecycle management involves typically. So you create your own application, then you install your application. After that, you have to tune the environment for best performance. Okay, then you have, when you have done this, you have to replicate these settings from your staging environment to the production environment. And when everything is set, obviously, and you go in production with your application, you have to monitor your application. And finally, we'll see what you need to do eventually to upgrade the application. So let's start from the first step, that is the settings dashboard. Okay, so you know that with Bistock Server 2006 and 2009, every time you have to properly configure the environment, you have to touch a lot of different repositories. So you have to define some settings within the registry, some settings within the configuration file. So you have to do this on each individual Bistock node, while other settings are defined within the Bistock Management DB. So there are multiple places that you need to go and touch to make sure that your environment is properly configured for best performance and best scalability. So this is, how can I say, it's a very compelling approach, and it was not so easy. So those of you that knows the performance optimization guide, you know, have an idea of the many steps that are required to properly configure the environment for best performance. So last year, when we reviewed the specifications for the vNext, in this case, Bistock Server 2010, we proposed to introduce this so-called performance dashboard, because we wanted to collect all these settings in a single dashboard and provide the ability to administrators to manage, to handle all these settings in a single place. Okay, and you will see also that we also change the granularity of these settings, and this really can improve the way you deploy your applications. Okay, you will see this in a minute, especially, but I just want to talk about the max receive interval. You know, the max receive interval is something that before you had to configure at the group level. So most of you in, I have seen in many customers, they had two different environments. One configured for low latency with a max receive interval value very aggressive, like 100 milliseconds, 50 milliseconds, something like that. While other environments were configured for batch processing. Okay, so you will see in a minute, this is no more required, because you can now configure the polling interval at the host level. And this is great. Okay, that means you can use the same environment for both batch processing and low latency applications. Okay, you will also see how you can import and export those settings from the dashboard. And this is very, very useful when you want to import and export your settings from your testing environment, re-import these settings in the staging environment or the production environment. And you will have access to those functionalities via APIs and also with the BTS task command. Okay, so as I said, the first step was centralizing some of these settings. So for example, the orchestration dehydration settings that so far were contained in the configuration file, now you can set them within the dashboard. Or other things that were centralized were throttling settings. Okay, or for example, the CLR hosting settings for BStore, you had, if you remember, you had to go and create them by your own within the registry, so on each individual machine. And we, as I said in the on the previous slide, we also increased the granularity of some of these settings. So the max receive interval now is no more at the group level. You can specify these at the host level. Okay. And the orchestration dehydration settings and memory throttling criteria that before could be configured only in the configuration file, so at the group level, now they are available at the host and host instance level. So for example, you could also create two different hosts where in, on one host you said you don't want to you specify that you want to never dehydrate orchestrations, while on the other one you say you specify a different approach, a different value for the dehydration setting. Then we consolidated some of settings in one. For example, we eliminated these three ones: agent thread pool size, agent threads per CPU, agent thread pool QLAN, and they become one: agent threads per CPU. We consolidated the transform threshold and the large message fragment size, okay, because indeed they were considered one parameter. And the max receive interval, once again, if you remember, we had four different service classes in one table, which is, was called ADM underscore service class. And there were four different rows, one for orchestration, one for messaging, one for isolated messaging, and one for MSNQT. So two of these were eliminated, isolated messaging and MSMQT. Moreover, at the host level, you can specify two different polling intervals for the messaging part and the orchestrations part of that host. Okay. We also removed some unused parameters. So for example, there were some file adapter settings that were not really used, so we removed them. And also the large fragment size, as I said, was consolidated with another one. From a usability standpoint, you will see that the dashboard is organized in three different sections. There is a group, host, and host instance levels. So, and also these settings are exposed through API. So WMI, Explorer OM, that now is support 64-bit. And you can also, you will see in the next demo, that you can also use BTS tasks to import and export these settings. Okay, so we can see the first demo. I hope so. Okay. Yeah. Here we go. So this is the RTM version of Visual Server 2010. Okay, so here, if you click the node which represents your Visual group, there is a new menu item called Settings. If you click this, you can see there are three different sections on the left-hand side. One is called Group, one is called Hosts, and the other one is called Host Instances. So at the group level, for example, a new feature is the Enable Group Level Tracking. That means that you don't need, you no longer need to go in the ADM underscore group table and set the Enable Global Tracking to zero if you want to disable global tracking. You can just go here and disable this way. Okay, so it's very easy. If we look at the hosts, so first of all, as I said, the first thing you can notice is there are two different polling intervals at the host level. One is for messaging and the other one is for orchestrations. Then you have the resource-based throttling, and you can see that here there are many, many values that you can specify, and some of this value before were accessible only on the registry. You had to go in the registry and specifically create a registry key. Now they are exposed this way, so it's much, much easier. For what regards orchestration throttling and the orchestration, the dehydration behavior, you can control dehydration behavior in two places. At the host level here, you can say, for example, you can say never. I never want orchestrations running within this host to dehydrate, for example, very easy. And another place at the host level, so let me say custom. And another place is at the host instance level. So here, if you go orchestration memory throttling, you can specify physical and virtual thresholds beyond which your orchestration starts to dehydrate, okay? And at the host instance level, you can see that you can specify the CLR threading settings, like the maximum worker threads, minimum worker threads, and so forth. So you no longer need to go and specify this stuff on the registry. Let's say when you have properly set your environment, you can just say export, okay, and you can export these settings in an XML file. So if we look at the format of this file, for example, this is, can you see this? Do you want me to increase the font size? Okay, you can do it? Okay. So you can see there are the group settings. So it's very, very easy. You can see there are group settings, host settings. So here there are the host settings for individual hosts, a host at a time. So for example, here, Bistro Server application. There are settings for the Bistro Server isolated host and so forth. If we scroll down, there is another section of the settings for the host instances. So as you can see, there, once again, there is the Bistro Server application host instance in this case and so forth. So it's very, very simple. So you can also create, an InfoPath form if you want to edit this stuff, for example. You can create an XSLT if you want to make it more readable and so forth. Now, let's look at the small demo to show you how easy it is, obviously, to tune your application. So in this case, I have, cancel. I have an application where I have a WCF request response receive location using the NetTCP, the WCF custom adapter. Okay, so when I publish a message, when I send a message through this receive location, this is processed by an orchestration that calculates an answer and send it back to the client application. Okay, so very easy. So if I'm using the custom, the default settings, okay, you can see that the default didn't change from Bistro Server 2006 and 2009 for what regards the polling interval. That is, the default is alpha second, 500 milliseconds. So I have here the performance counters, and in particular, I'm looking at the request response latency, okay. So if I submit some messages against my application, okay, And you can see here the response is around 0.63 seconds. I can also look at the request response latency here. You can see that it's around 0.506 seconds. Okay. So let's say I want to properly tune my application for low latency. Okay, so I stop. I clear. I could do it in two ways. So the first technique is I come here, I open settings, and I manually change. So for example, I could say the Bistro server application, I want to change the polling interval to for the Bistro server application for the orchestration part to 100 milliseconds, something like that. And I could change the polling interval, okay, for the host running my receive location, once again to 100 milliseconds. I could come back to the Bistro server application running my orchestration. I could say I want my orchestration to never dehydrate. Or, for example, I could, for example, disable global checking, something like that. And I could apply. Or I can also do this way. I can just click import. Okay. Yeah, we'll see this in the next demo. Okay, so let's do this. Now, let me check. So I said 100 milliseconds here. 100 milliseconds here for the messaging part. I say okay. You have to restart your host instances to have the new settings to get effect. Come on. Takes time. Yeah, this is an Hyper-V machine, and it's not very fast. So let's restart host instances. Okay, and now let's try again our test. Cross our finger. Okay, so now you see that it's much, much more responsive. You can see that now the response time is around 0.1 seconds. So it's very, very easy to tune the application. This way you don't have to go in several points and change stuff in a million points. You can do this very quickly, and you can do this also using a script. We'll see this in a minute. So you can switch back to the Okay. So next. So what we have seen, so CLR hosting keys, they were in the registry, now they are in the setting dashboard. Orchestration dehydration settings, they were in the configuration file at the machine level. And you couldn't set these on a host basis, now you can. So they are in the setting dashboard. Once again, the max receive interval, global tracking, blah, 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 they were contained in different tables. Now they can be configured with the setting dashboard. So what about if you need to migrate this configuration from the staging to the production environment? So the answer is very, very easy. You can do this. You can replicate settings across different environments. You can export your settings. Then when you re-import these settings in a different environment, you can also map settings. So, for example, you can assign to a host the settings that were defined for another host. Okay, so you can say, I don't know, I want to assign the settings for the Bistro server application to three different hosts, for example. Same story for the host instances. Another very, very important thing is that you can do this making a script and using the BTS task, and I will show you this. Okay, so let's see a demo very quickly. So, as we have seen, for example, if I come back here and I say settings, I can go here and say export, for example, And this is very easy. I can just go here and create a name, okay, and say Stockholm, okay, and save. That's it. Very, very easy. When I import instead, it's a little bit complex. It's flexible, not complex. You say file location. You will see this. I mean, it's, you know, you can do, your child can do this, okay? But if it maps the wrong things to the wrong thing, it make a mess, but that's okay. Let's say that I want to repristinate default settings, okay? So you can see here I have two different files, XML files. One is called tune settings and the other one is default settings, okay? I can just go here and say next, and here we go. You see, you have destination host, Bistro Server application. I double click and I say, okay, this is the source, okay? But for the isolated host, same story. But I could also say, instead of mapping the Bistro Server receive host, I could once again say I want to map settings for the Bistro Server application to the Bistro Server receive host. So you can decide, okay? You can just basically map. So let's do a one-to-one in this case, mapping. So after that, you can go and say edit and do the same thing for host instances. So once again, I have four host instances because in this case, it's a single machine, obviously. And for host instances, just in-process host instances, not isolated host instances, okay? At this point, you can just say next and import. That's it. So, and after that, you have to go and eventually you have to restart your host instances. You can do this by script and it's not that difficult. So let's say you want to show you how you can export. This is just to import. So can you read this? Okay, let me... Christopher. Okay, so you can see it's very straightforward. It's BTS import settings source, your XML. Then you have to pass an additional element, which is the map. The map is very, very straightforward. Okay, here is the same. The map contains the same information that you would specify on the UI. That is, I want to map settings for the Bistro Server application to the Bistro Server application. Let's say that you want to map settings for a specific service host to multiple destinations, that is destination host, you can separate, you can make a list and use the semicolon to separate all of them. So it's very, very easy. Okay. Next. So okay, now we can talk about briefly on SCOM, okay? Because briefly because I know that you are going to have another session in 1 month or something that is fully you had already. So as you know, the management pack for Bistro Server 2010 was greatly improved. Okay, so first of all, now there are two different views for two different kinds of administrators. One is for the so-called enterprise IT administrator, which is mostly interested in monitoring the state and the health of individual subsystems like SQL, the enterprise single sign-on, networking, blah, blah, blah. So in a few words, is interested in the overall health of a Bistro Server setup. While the other view is mostly for Bistro Server administrators that are more interested in monitoring the health status of Bistro applications and artifacts. Okay, so a couple of things that were improved. The discovery now is much, much better because before, if you had multiple nodes in your Bistro group, there was a risk that certain artifacts were discovered multiple times by the agent running on individual boxes, and so in the SCOM console you saw these elements multiple times. Now this was fixed, and another thing that was improved was is the ability of the management pack to find relationships between artifacts. So for example, now just to give an example, request ports are receive ports are discovered before receive locations, then afterward receive location, and then the management pack is able to rebuild the, to build the relationship between the two. Another part of the management pack I like a lot is the ability to provide a visual representation of artifacts. So, for example, in the previous version of the management pack, you had just the ability to understand if a specific artifact was stopped or running, like an orchestration or a port. You couldn't say, you couldn't understand how many instances were running, if the instances were running correctly or not. Now, for example, if the instances of a specific orchestration are all running fine, that orchestration is represented in green within the console. If less than 70% of those orchestrations are running fine, that means there are some suspended orchestrations, then that artifact is represented in yellow. And instead, if less than a certain amount is running fine, and there, you have a lot of suspended instances for that specific orchestration, that artifact is represented in red. And also there is another functionality which is the diagnostic. So when one of those artifacts turn from green to yellow or to red, administrators get notified, and they have an error message that they can use to understand what was the reason why they received this event. So I think this is a good news for all, enterprise IT administrators and BizTalk administrators. Okay.
The upgrade. So with 2010, there comes the upgrade path that's supported for 2006 R2 and also 2009. There are considerations to be made, such as we're going to come back to this later on, like the SQL adapter is no longer part of the product, and you need to, you know, take care of those issues before you go on with the upgrade. Cumulative updates, like monthly updates, has been part of SQL for quite some time, and that is also going to be rolled out now for BizTalk. 2006 R2 has been, or no, it was released in September, I think, and 09 is coming out later this year, and 2010 is hopefully going out on that path as well at the end, or the beginning of next year. So in the alignment with the other product and product stack, of course, the R2 version of both Windows and SQL, along with the support for .NET Framework 4.0 and Visual Studio. Windows 2003 is no longer supported, and we're also leaving behind SQL 2005. An issue, but something to think about, is Visual Studio 2010, you cannot deploy to BizTalk 2009. And that also, I think, goes the other way around. You can't deploy from 08 to BizTalk 2010. I'm not sure, but I think that has to do with the alignment with the framework. As probably many of you already know, that .NET 4.0 is really a new framework, a new CLR, opposed to like 3.0 or 3.5 was really just extensions of the 2.0. So did you have anything to add to that? Or?
No.
So removed features. So we're no longer able to expose our services as ASMX services. No. AdWord reference is replaced by consume WCF service wizard. I think most of them are working with that one as well. EDI pipelines are replaced with the other pipelines and context properties from the trading part of management. The WStar adapter says, this is from the documentation, it says WCF custom transport. I'm not sure that it's a transport or if it's just custom, replaced by the custom adapter, WCF custom adapter.
Probably.
Also, the line of business adapter, the legacy ones for the SAP, Oracle, and Siebel were all replaced with bindings in the BizTalk adapter pack, and that also goes for SQL. So let's take a silent. So SQL adapter is not longer any part of BizTalk. In fact, there is no SQL adapter in BizTalk 2010 when it shipped. So you have to install the adapter pack. And the reason for that is the dependency for the LOB adapter SDK. So what I just recently understood, Paolo told me, was this about the BizTalk adapter pack migration tool. I actually tried that out last night. It actually works. So if you have well, I was kind of surprised because...
Well, indeed, the SQL adapter is still there. It's considered obsolete, but it's still there.
The SQL adapter is there?
Yes, yes, yes. Otherwise, you couldn't migrate to the WCF SQL also.
No, are you sure that the SQL adapter is part?
Yeah, it's there. Yes.
Yeah. In the RTM.
I can see that.
Okay. Anyway. Wow. So I spend all that time with the migration tool in for no use.
Well, no, why? No. It's something
I can
that
tell you how it
use.
Works. You open it up. You point it to your BizTalk project or solution, and it will find all these schemas that was being generated through the adapter metadata feature. And it will update those schemas, it will update all the mappings and update all the orchestrations. And of course, if you're using an XPath in expressions and such, you have to do that manually.
Yes.
But that goes for all the LOB adapters, including yes. SQL adapter. Other database-related enhancements, support for, like Paolo mentioned it before, a lot of customers have been requested the backup compression and encryption came along with the support for 2008 R2, or actually 2008, I think, the SP1. Yeah. So a lot of customers have really big log files, DTA databases, and even though it consumes a little more CPU, that really makes up for much faster transport of data. I guess a lot of you, including myself, use Explorer OM, which now supports 64-bit. And 64-bit support is also supported for standard edition of BizTalk, which is strange that it wasn't there before. It's been available for all other editions, including branch edition.
Yeah, honestly, I think it's the same. It's the same code. But I didn't have the chance to try out the standard edition. So this is what I know. But you know, I could come back if you send me the line that you have seen in the documentation. I can come back to the product group and ask. No, because obviously I'm not Jesus Christ. I don't have all the answers.
So I can confirm the SQL adapter is there. I'm sorry for the misleading.
No, yeah.
So anyway, we're running. I have about 2 minutes left and two demos to make.
Yeah, but we started in a delay. We're five minutes in a delay. So take it easy.
So SQL compression. Before I, as Paolo was talking and doing his demos, I did this backup. So you can see here that I have, this is the sizes of the files that have been backed up. And by looking at the jobs, there is the backup job now, which has been added another step. So here's the flag you can set whether or not you want this to be compressed. Set it to 1.
No, delete the history.
I think I did already.
Ah, you did already. Okay, good.
So I deleted the history prior to this, just so we enforce a full backup. So you can see already here on the DTA database that you have a huge difference. Now, you had some references for really huge log files.
So probably many of you have seen that when the application has to sustain a very large amount of messages per second, you can also end up to have a transaction log for the message box that grows up to 5 gigabytes every 15 minutes. So every time you take a backup of the transaction log, is huge. So this functionality is very useful in that case. The only thing I want you to be aware of is that obviously compression is a very CPU intensive operation. So you can, if you enable backup compression, you can save space over the disk, but obviously you have a higher CPU utilization when the backup job runs. That's it. That's a good question. I think it's in the enterprise. I should double check, but I think it's in the enterprise.
We can bring that up in the panel with Mark. Another often requested feature has been support for FTPS or FTP over SSL. Just to clarify, that was also said by Kurt, and it's also part of the product site, product information, that there is no FTPS adapter. Is there an enhancement on the already existing FTP adapter? And this will encrypt the request to the FTP server, such as it will encrypt the username, password information that would otherwise go open on the wire. There's also a possibility to, or a feature to enable data protection, which I think comes back on port 19 or something like that, and you can enable that information to be encrypted as well. Another thing is if you're using an account with doesn't have the right privileges for an FTP server, you would, in previous releases, get an error when the FTP server is trying to remove that file. So now you have the option of working in read-only mode, where the file names that for the files that have been pulled from the adapter is going to be saved in a file, I think in the management database. And you also have the possibility to enable a timestamp comparison, so together with the file name, also the last modified date. So if that is changed, the file will be picked up again. And even more, you can do the re-download interval. So if you know that you're going to pull, there's going to be a new file every 24 hours, it will ignore that file until that time have elapsed. So if that file is still there, it's going to be picked up, but hopefully it's a new file. Yeah.
Yes.
I think it does.
I think it does. And yeah.
I think there's only one adapter left that is 32 bits, and it's not the FTP adapter.
I should find out anyway.
I'm pretty sure it is, but let's get back. Who asked the question? Yeah. So let's put it out in the mail that we send out next time for everybody, so you get the information. It's a good question. So FTPS, FTP over SSL. I had to prepare this some now because we were short of time. So what I did, IS75, you have in on the root level, you have the option of managing certificates. So at this point, I just added one by creating a self-signed certificate. You just add a friendly name to it. There's nothing more to it. And I have a site. I have a, this one you can close. Sorry. Let's just see how this works. Wow, look, SQL adapter. So I have a receive location, a send port. It will pick up any file from this directory.
The documentation says that it's the same. I don't know if it's an error in the documentation, it's the same as the previous releases. That says running the FTP adapter, POP3 adapter, and MIME decoder on 64-bit host instances is not supported. So,
So anyway, that worked, and there was no SSL involved there. So let's just put up a trace here. So I don't know if you work with TCP trace, but it basically works as a proxy, where I change the port name to on my... change the port number on my port. In this case, we go to 100. You can see here that, you know, it really comes out in clear text, so it's really easy to get this information. So at this stage, we can go back on our FTP site, and we can, since we added that certificate before, we can utilize that in our FTP site. We can allow or require SSL connections. So the next step you need to do, and which I've also prepared, you have to export the private key, the public key, and then import that to your certificate store. So you can just see I have the trust certificate on this one. This is my my private one, and I have my public one up here. There we are. Sorry. I'll leave that open. Go back, set back the port to 21. And now I have these settings here where I can enable use SSL. That was really bad. I closed the window because I need it again. So what we need is the hash value for that certificate, which is this one, the thumbprint. We copy that, and we set that value on the certificate hash. And that picked up. And also, if we, again, just to prove my point, sorry, I got to disable that. You can see that the username and password is not coming out anymore. So I think that's a really good feature. We have some other features that we haven't been covering. All in the gray here we have pretty much covered. We have not talked about trading party management, as we think that is a different talk. And I've talked to Kurt Peterson, who promised us to send someone up from the product team to talk about EDI again. That was a very appreciated session we had. I think it was like a year and a half ago or something like that. That would include also HIPAA for healthcare as well, I guess. Johan, as you said earlier, is going to talk about the BizTalk mapper. The support for .NET 4.0, we haven't talked about that very much. That is not exactly true. I think there is some stuff is still on 3.5, such as the WCF adapters are still on .NET 3.5, so some of the features that is coming out with 4.0 is not going to be able to work with BizTalk. Compression, we talked about that. Was there a question? No? There's also a pretty neat feature for monitoring known issues. So I think we have time to just show that one. So there is a job you can run.
Which is a new job.
It's a new job. And this will fail. That's the behavior. It's not supposed to fail, but there is a problem with my environment, And if I go to look at the job history of this one, that is actually how it behaves. So look at this one. Fail is going to say something here, but it says that I have 37 orphan DTA service instances. I have 10 messages with the recount less than zero, blah, blah, blah. There are other ways I can access that information. I think I have it open. So it's just two tables. So you can actually see what kind of problems you have. And I'm not on the network right now, but on the presentation, there's a link which will give you some more information about what this really means. And I think that job is default scheduled to go off every, like once a day. Weekly schedule. Yeah, once
weekly schedule.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. You can change that if you want.
Okay.
So do you want to sum it up?
Yeah.
What you talked about?
Yeah, I think that in a few words, in Business 7 2010, you will be able to find a lot of other features that we didn't touch today, like the mapper, or, for example, another very important feature I like a lot are the two activities that you can use in WF to integrate Business 7 with App Fabric and WF. So, for example, you can now use the activity that Bistro provides to invoke a transformation map within a WF workflow, for example. And then we also provide another activity for WF in order to use a WCF LOB adapter. So I think this is a first step in the right direction for integrating Bistro with App Fabric. And I think we already touched all the other features. So.
Yeah.
Yes, we are running out of time. Okay.
Cool. So we'll take the questions during the last panel then also. Thank you.
Thank you.